This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Hello there. The current time is 6:31 p.m., and you were tuned in to WRFL Lexington.
That's right. I'm one of your co-hosts, Mitch.
And I am Grant, and for the next hour and a half, up until 8 p.m., we are going to be here with you talking about everything that you could want to know this week in science and technology.
Indeed. We've got lots of, about three or four good articles lined up for you guys this week. Unfortunately, this week has definitely been a little slow on the technology news and definitely very heavy on the political news. So we don't have a whole lot this week, but we do have enough to keep you all going and make sure you're informed.
I think perhaps really the issue is that the technology news has been so overwhelmed by a single topic this week that it's hard to diversify that. And I think enough people have talked in enough ways at this point about the cyber attack last week that it really isn't. It's also the case that it happened starting on a Friday, so you know, wrapping all the way back around for a whole week. I feel like a lot of what's been said has been done. I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but for the time being, let's go for something else.
Agreed. Well, here's two neat little stories to start off our evening. If you have a Google phone and use any of their built-in emojis, you'll notice that they're a little bit different than the ones you might see on, say, Facebook or an iPhone. And there's sort of these little yellow blobs. Well, it is official. Google is killing off its blob emojis.
The little round
yellow marshmallows.
Yeah.
Yep. And so apps like Gmail, Hangouts, and basically everything Android is finally removing its emojis. And they will no longer look like, according to this CNN article, mutant lemon gumdrops that spent too much time in the sun.
One, that's an excellent description of how they look, but two, what are your feelings on this personally?
You know, I really don't know. If they're just going to go with the traditional emoji, I think that's probably a good move. I think they tried to set themselves apart, and it just was kind of weird. People used it and it translated to regular emojis just fine. But, I mean, being weird just for the sake of being weird sometimes backfires. And I don't think that so much has backfired as it just was like a, meh, you know, okay.
I was never really a particularly big fan of them. And also, in some ways, it felt like perhaps they didn't always convey the exact mood that I was expecting them to.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I guess when people think about emojis, you usually think about like the standard Apple and Facebook set that kind of came first. But the Android emojis were always kind of odd and in some very specific ways very different. This is by far the most jarring difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm honestly...
It's part of something we'll be talking about later on this evening whenever we start our coverage of the Google I.O. Developers Conference that happened on Wednesday. But it's part of the Android O, you know, Android codename O, which is going to be the next... Anywho. So we'll be talking about Android I.O.'s Developer Conference later this evening. And that's really all I had for the little blob emoji discussion of this evening. The other thing I want to talk about in this segment that I find kind of neat is Samsung may re-release its Note 7 as a Fandom Edition phone. This is a rumor, 100% a rumor. It's coming from CNET today. And basically, it's a move that is, quote, making lemonade out of lemons. Samsung may sell refurbished editions of its infamous Galaxy Note 7 under a new name, the Galaxy Note Fandom Edition, or Galaxy Note FE. So they ceased production and recalled that Note 7 twice after the infamous summer last year in which their batteries kept catching on fire and exploding in the phone. So in March, Samsung has stated it's going to recycle returned Note 7s in an environmentally friendly way and listed turning the device's into refurbished phones or rental phones as one of its three core methods. Today, a report from the Korean news outlet ET News says that these handsets may be called the Galaxy Note FE, which stands, like I said earlier, for the Fandom Edition. Very interesting that they're taking these phones, of which they've finally figured out what the battery problem was, and it, you know, have replaced it. And despite the fact that Samsung has reported 93% of all devices having been returned, there are still thousands of people using their Galaxy Note 7. Grant, what are your thoughts on this?
I find this interesting from a PR perspective. Quite frankly, this is pretty ambitious, I guess you could say, because you know they have to have the evidence that the battery issue has been completely resolved. If it hasn't been, then they're just setting themselves up for round three, right?
Not from my understanding. My understanding is they're going to take all these, you know, of these 93% return phones that weren't damaged, they're going to refurbish them, remove the bad batteries, and put in a less powerful battery that is, you know, will fit within the casing. It won't be as powerful as the original Note 7 battery advertised would be. And I think they're going to put a different operating system on it. I think it's going to have a sort of, since they're going to be using them more as rental phones and Fandom phones, I think it's going to have more of a sort of a fan-curated operating system in which all of the favorite features of Android over the years will be implemented. I wouldn't say there's anything new going into this operating system so much as, you know, just favorite, you know, stitching together of old operating systems, which will take less battery because there wasn't anything as robust as Marshmallow or Nougat going on this weaker battery. So I don't know. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what they do. And once again, just to reiterate, this is just a rumor at this point, but if it proves true, like Grant said, it would be very interesting from a PR standpoint, using a recalled phone, honestly one of the worst phone recalls we've seen in the past 10 years, sort of getting turned around and reused like that.
Yeah, it's a move that surprises me, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. We'll see if this comes to fruition. Do you know why it's called Fandom?
Because of the cult following that more or less the Galaxy Note series has had. You had the Galaxy Note Edge, which was a very, very popular phone. It was my first Android phone myself. And it was so popular to the point that before they ceased production, people who currently had those Galaxy Note Edge phones would go out and buy two or three of them brand new just to sit on until theirs broke or got old, and they would open it up and have a new one as a replacement. I mean, it was just a very popular phone, very popular release, very popular series of phones. A lot of people like the Galaxy Note series. And so I think that with the Note 7, you had so many people who were disappointed that they weren't able to have that brand new Galaxy Note experience due to the battery issues. You had a lot of holdouts who refused to turn in their phone, to the point where Verizon even threatened forcing an update over their network that would basically brick any Galaxy Note 7 phone not turned in on Verizon's network. It's definitely a weird, has a weird sort of cult following, this phone series does, that I've really haven't seen with Apple, you know? So. Anyways, those are the two articles that I wanted to cover first this evening. Up next, after our short music break, we're going to have the some coverage from the Google I/O Developers Conference and also some updates on the current FCC battle about repealing the Obama administration's 2015 net neutrality rules.
All right. We're going to be bringing all of that to you here in just a few minutes. The current time is 7:03, and you are tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. More specifically, you're tuned in to Tech Talks here on WRFL.
That's right. So thanks for tuning in and checking out with us this week as we cover some of the few, I guess, overshadowed events and technology that happened this week.
Yeah, this week has been shrouded by a lot of conversation about the WannaCry attack that occurred starting last Friday, but
The specifics, it being the second version called WannaCryptor.
It's the
second evolution of this particular malware virus that has been actually proving pretty difficult to kill.
Unfortunately, so they were at least able to freeze a lot of the activity on it growing starting last weekend, but it's still been a challenge to crack the software in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
But
so one of the big things that happened this past week was actually yesterday. The Google's annual developer conference, labeled the I/O basically, was held this week near its Mountain View headquarters complex. And one of the big, takeaways of this particular conference was AI and machine learning and the best practical applications that we have as of right now. We weren't really expecting any major hardware launches this year because, you know, as we said before, AI is still a very fledgling technology. It's something that some people even are having the debate of what really truly is artificial intelligence, because going back to the philosophical debate of what is intelligence.
We have this conversation at least once every other month or so, just because that's the territory that we're in.
Exactly. So despite the fact we weren't expecting any major new hardware launches this year, it was time for Google to sort of build on what we saw last year with regards to personal assistants, AI, and cloud computing. Some of the things that stood out was the Google Lens. It'll be a while before Google Lens is available, but today it was the centerpiece of the keynote. The app uses image recognition to identify objects appearing in your camera lens real time. It means you can point your smartphone at a flower and be told what it is. So basically, it is a photographic Google search.
Yeah, it's a real-time reverse image search.
Mm-hmm. Another neat feature that they're boasting about Google Lens is that you can point it at the sticker on the back of a Wi-Fi router that may have the Wi-Fi password written on it, you know, something like that, and it will automatically understand, okay, this is the network identification according to the serial number here, and here's the password. I can go on and connect to this Wi-Fi router now without need for manual input. So it's sort of like what Apple did whenever they made their iTunes card scannable, in that you could point your iPhone camera at it, and it'll automatically pick up the code and know, okay, this is a valid code or this is an invalid code, and add iTunes money to your account depending on whether or not it's valid. So another use that was touted about the Google Lens is that you could point it at a restaurant and get instant reviews or menus, pardon me, or even be able to scan the menu in a different language, have it translated, and be able to ask, what does that dish look like, and be shown a photograph of the meal in question. They didn't have a date set for when Lens would finally be available. It did say it would be part of its assistant, or its assistant and photos app at first, though it seems to me that the most useful way of offering it might just be able to integrate it into the camera app itself defaultly on most Android versions. So what's your initial thoughts on that?
Specifically about Lens, I think there's a lot of application, and it's going to take us a long time to unpack all of the stuff that we're going to be able to do with that. It's
true, but the big takeaway here is that we finally have a reliable app promised, and Google's been pretty spot on about delivering with their promises, a viable app for image searching, which hasn't existed yet. So I just think that's a very fascinating and neat thing to do.
It's perhaps a more general approach to that software that could take pictures of math and do the calculations, or the software that could, because Google Translate's been able to do this for a little bit now. You can show it something in one language, it will scan it and detect it, and in real time lay your native language over top of it. But
so the second big thing that came out of the I/O conference is what they're calling their Daydream virtual reality platform. And basically, Daydream is Google's, VR platform. It's as it comes advertised, So I don't think there's a whole lot to unpack with that one. We've all sort of been expecting it, especially with PlayStation VR and sort of the Oculus Rift and the Samsung VR experiences coming out. It was only a matter of time before Google got around to building its own VR experience, and I think that's what we're seeing here.
I'm interested to see all of the enhancements that can come with Daydream itself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kind of curious where they're going to go with it, what kind of avenue they're going to take, and hopefully that platform will be something open and part of the SDK.
Mm-hmm. Actually, an interesting note about that. The Samsung Galaxy devices will actually work with Daydream. And now it's an interesting development, because not only will they work with Samsung Gear VR, which is an alternative headset ran by Oculus VR, which is owned by Facebook. So you're seeing some meshing of these big companies that normally you wouldn't see Google and Facebook working on something together like this, as far as making them cross-compatible. So, then the third main thing that I'd like to highlight is that it's announced a VPS, which is a visual positioning system. So most of us are familiar with GPS, which is, a global positioning system. But that technology can really only get you so far. Google is thinking that VPS is able to fill in the gap of when you're outside of these large areas, the limitations posed by GPS can be difficult. You can't really get a super precise location based just alone off GPS. There has to be some sort of second way of triangulating your position to make it more accurate. Google is thinking that VPS will help fill that gap. They're going to be using Tango, which is a 3D visualization technology. and they will look for recognizable objects around you to work out where you are with an accuracy of only a few centimeters. So, for example, if you're in New York City and you're using GPS, that GPS will probably be able to tell you that you're somewhere in Times Square, for example. With Google's VPS, if you had your camera on and were looking around, it could tell you exactly how far you are within a, say, a few centimeters from any restaurant or shop in Times Square, which is sort of a level of accuracy that we haven't been able to get to with traditional GPS technology. So I thought those were three of the really most interesting things coming out of the Google I/O Developers Conference this past Wednesday. I'm really looking forward to the first thing that we mentioned, talking about finally having a Google-powered image-related search.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. And I think that's got a lot of really cool application to it coming up. I wanted to go over a couple of things that are really kind of quick relative to some of the bigger unpacking things. Firstly, Google Homes are getting a big upgrade through the rest of this year. They're now going to be able to make calls through VoIP.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be getting a lot more features integrated into them, because I think that's the biggest issue they've had so far, is that the environment hasn't been open enough to really make these things hugely practical. But I think that's about to change.
I agree with you. The voice VoIP, voice over internet protocol, is definitely something that we can take advantage of with relation to Google Home. And I think it's something that we really haven't. For example, say you're cooking and you need to call someone and Google Home is sitting in your kitchen, that hands-free capability to be able to answer phone calls will really, I think, help in just little convenience ways that not many people think of.
Yeah. Yeah, and so one of the demos that they talked about that actually was one of the most promising and one of the most subtle to me was someone speaking to a Google Home saying, "Send me directions to," and then they said an address out loud. It searched it and sent the map results to their phone, which is the kind of thoughtfulness to me that speaks of like a well-tuned home integration, so to say.
I agree. I think that between Alexa and Google Home, I think we're going to see the true integration of smart homes, in the sense that having an AI assistant run your home, I think that this is going to be that gateway step.
Yeah, this is a genuine race to the top right now, and I am excited to see the features that shake out of this.
Indeed. All right, everyone. Well, that is all that I have for you this week. I want to thank you for tuning in and checking out with us. Grant might be able to have another article later on. I'll leave that up to him, but unfortunately, I have to sign off now. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you all next week.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Mitch, and I will see you next Thursday.
Sounds good.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.